So wie gesagt, auf Englisch, I would switch to English. So what else, what is this else that we engineers would like to compute, would like to get out of these CT images? Our topic was partially mentioned in the previous talk. And I would approach a clinical problem, this is the cost fracture, with our engineering tools, with our engineering approach, and show you a little bit what we do. So we work with a tool. It's a CT as well as the previous one, but it's an in vivo CT. It's a high resolution peripheral QCT. You will hear a bit more about it in the upcoming presentations. I will also show some slides about it. So the outline would be that I would introduce the problem, then the tools that we're using, on the one hand the CT, on the other hand the finite element analysis tools that we developed and that we're using in our institute. I would show you an experimental model of cost fracture, and then we see why bone sections have special interest, is at special interest, finally come to some conclusions. So the motivation of our project is osteoporosis and the clinical outcome, osteoporotic fractures. And one of them is the distal forearm, the fracture of the distal forearm, which was shown to occur earlier in lifetime than the other ones. And especially in postmenopausal women, it could be used as a predictive tool for the most devastating other osteoporotic fractures as the hip or the vertebral spine. So the question is, this radius fracture, which the typical form of which is this cost fracture. So can we compute a fracture risk? Or the real question is, can we predict the fracture even before it would occur? And instead of going into the big problem of fracture risk, which includes the problem of probability of falling of a patient, we simplify the problem to the risk of failure, where we already assume that the patient is falling. We estimate a falling load, and the big question here is, what is the resistance side? What is the force that one bone could resist? I call it a fracture load. Our working hypothesis was that, so it's a question actually, can our finite element tool, which is based on this high-resolution peripheral QCT, predict a patient-specific cost fracture risk? So, where does really cost fracture occur? This is the question here. In a recent study, more than 150 cases were investigated with the help of radiographs, and the distances on the dorsal and on the palmar side of the fracture line were found to show these numbers. So the fracture would, in the mean fracture, which of course doesn't exist, but it would run something like this. But interestingly, this fracture and localization pattern was independent of the energy of the fracture and of the classification. So if it was an intra or extra articular fracture. Okay, so I would move shortly to the introduction of our tools. First of all, the HRP QCT. So this is again the high resolution peripheral computed tomography tool. And the provider, the manufacturer is Kenko. The product name is Extreme CT. So this is one of the first really HRP QCT high resolution. So this is an in vivo tool, a clinical or preclinical tool, which can scan the distal peripheries like the radius or the tibia with a fairly high resolution, with an acceptable dose. The problem is that the region that we get is restricted to 9 millimeter slice of the bone and takes 3 minutes to scan this. But we were happy to get this in our hands in 2007, as far as I remember. And we also started doing research with this. So let's see what this 82 micrometer resolution or voxel size better say voxel size is not the true resolution, bring us. So I think you know this image. If you look at trabecular bone, this is the regular QCT. These three images were made of the same bone, same trabecular piece, and they were registered in space for the same volume. So this is with what you get in clinics with this 0.4, 0.3 millimeter voxel size. The other end is the micro CT. As we heard, you can get really nice images. This was done, I think, at 18 microns, so you see the trabecular network nicely. And here is our tool, HRPQCT. A lot of noise, but you start to see the structure. So this was encouraging. And then what we do, we process those images, and it's not simple image processing, but some type of engineering approach what we do here. So imagine that we segment this image, meaning you would separate the bone part for the non-bone part. You would put one for each bone voxels and zero for the marrow or the non-bone voxels. And you come up with an image like this. We treat this image a bit differently as we convert each bone voxel to a finite element, which you, well, the easiest thing to imagine that this is a Lego part, and you're building your radius out of tiny Lego parts. It's a really detailed Lego model, and you need a lot of Lego for this. This is the weakness of the whole approach, a lot of elements, but the nice thing is you have really detailed description. And this is a virtual tool. This is a virtual physical model that we can load, for example, by constraining the lower plane and applying some force on the top or displacement on the top. And then with this, we can compute the stiffness and furthermore the strength of the bone. And this comes now really interesting, as what we want to get is bone strength. So if there's a tool which is coming from the image, so it's a patient, it's an individual model of the patient, it's for each patient different. So then we have a chance that this model will predict the truth. So let's see how it performs. Another type of model, so this is the previous one, was the microfinite element model, where you really go into micro level. The homogenized finite element model, and I would draw your attention here, you see that our elements are much larger than the trabecular network. This would mean that we neglect what's behind those elements, so we would put one material. The thing is that we don't neglect the trabecular structure, because each of those tetrahedral elements have individualized material properties based on volume fraction and the trabecular anisotropic orientation included by this element, roughly speaking. We also have a separation between the dense cortical shell and the trabecular region, and we can apply loading the same way. It was shown by us that these two models are almost equivalent in terms of predictions, and they perform almost equally well, both in predicting the stiffness and the ultimate force or strength of distal radius slices. But now I would go to the experimental model of cross fracture, so coming closer to the clinical problem that we have. This is the model that we developed. So what we did, we cut one third of the radii, and we embedded them like this, mounted them, clamped them to some material testing device, and applied actual loading. Thanks to this small angulation, we really got coarse fractures, as you will see, while we were measuring the displacement and the force. And from this we could get the ultimate force, which would be the in vitro idealized coarse fracture load in our case. Before breaking those bones, we scanned a fairly large region, the same region, which is fairly large compared to a standard 9mm, an extreme CT. We wanted to see what this resolution gives us. We built this, as I mentioned, the homogenized finite element models based on volume fraction and anisotropy. We call it fabric. This is the trabecular architectural anisotropy. And we put elasticity, we put a material model based on elasticity, plasticity, and damage. That means that the elements can have damage, which is a scalar variable between 0 and 1. So 0 would be an undamaged element. And if during the simulation it converges to 1, then it's almost vanishing and does not provide any contribution. So with this modeling technique, we managed to show that the experiment of ultimate force that measured in the lab could be predicted with an 87% accuracy with our tool. And beyond the numbers, we've seen that this damage variable, which would be no damage blue, full damage red, predicted the actual fracture line, or showed some indications of the fracture line. So this went way beyond what we expected to get from this. So we were lucky with this, or happy with this. But now you can ask me, okay, it's really nice, but to create those models, you had to scan the whole 1/3 of the radius. This you cannot do in a patient, right? So my answer is, we did the next study, where the importance of the sections, the bone sections, these 9mm sections, was drawing attention. What we did, we took those HRT QCT images and cropped 9mm regions out of those. The standard, which is the inbuilt default in the extreme CT, and one most distal. Why? I will tell you later. We computed the density-based and the three-dimensional histomorphometrical parameters indices from the images. And additionally, we generated finite element models and computed failure force, fracture force from these micro-FE models. So as I told you, this is the way separation of cortex and trabecular bone, and then finite element model with small Lego parts, and then loading. This loading represents a simplified loading of Gauss fracture when you fall on the ground with an outstretched hand. So the results are, interestingly and surprisingly, BMC, which is bone mineral content, was a very strong predictor of the experimental ultimate force. So this is rather good news. That means that our bones are well designed, because if the amount of material predicts the ultimate force, that means that the radius knows that somebody will fall this ways, and it's its structure is really optimized. There's bone only on the spots where it's needed. So this was an interesting result. The simulated DEXA, which we simulated from the HRPQ CT scans, were not that strong either, and neither the histomorphometrical indices. We could add up some accuracy with our microfinite element tool. So this was finally the strongest predictor for experimental ultimate force. And there's one more interesting thing. You look at this column and this column, you see that for each index, you see an increase in the correlation coefficient if you move to the most distal section. What does this mean? I'll tell you in the next slide. So this is the micro-FE ultimate force versus the experimental ultimate force. You've seen the correlation coefficients. What I'd like to show you here, it's not only a correlation. We're really predicting the value in force, force measure, so in newtons, kilonewtons. And especially in case of the most distal case, we have a qualitative match, a quantitative match. That means that we really we can predict the actual value of the ultimate force. And as I told you, most distal section seems to be a bit better. This tells us that, and one more thing I would like to remind you of, this is a 9mm section. This is experimental result of a 1/3 of the radius. So we manage to predict from a 9mm image the experimental load of the whole radius. That means two things: that on the one hand, that the micro-FE is working well; on the other hand, that we found, especially with the most distal section, we found the weakest link, the weakest ring region within the distal radius. This is the weakest link in the chain. And it's not surprising if you look at, if I replot this figure with the fracture statistics, and I plot the locations of these sections on top of it, you see that the most distal section covers better or covers more of this scattered data. So it's more probable that we capture the weakest region if we take the most distal and not the standard that is inbuilt in the machine. You could ask me about reproducibility of this tool, of this microFE tool. I can only provide you with data from in vitro study, which was done by rescanning 12 cadaveric arms 6 times. So the patient motion is not there, which is an important factor, but at least we've seen the in vitro reproducibility, which was acceptable from 1.2 to 2.9% CV in case of the unregistered, and it went below 1, and it was 1.2 in case of the registered, meaning that we were matching the volume of the follow-up scan with the volume of the baseline, because if you rescan, you're not necessarily hit the same region, so you have to get the common region, common volume, and analyze this. Otherwise, you're analyzing another region which has another strength. Okay, that's about reproducibility, and with this I would like to come to the conclusion. So one thing we learned is coarse fracture line does not stay in the standard section of HRPQCT, but it seems to be more distal. So the best thing what we could do, we suspect that the best thing what we could do is to shift this region as distal as possible. Secondly, we've seen that HRPQCT is a good source to build both microFE and homogenized FE models from. And the main results are that coarse fracture load, this is this clinical problem that we approach with this tool, could be predicted with a fairly high accuracy. Furthermore, not only quantitative prediction, but quantitative match was found between the damage region of the model and the fracture localization, and that we have acceptable reproducibility. Again, it's in vitro. We will have to design in vivo studies to investigate it more. So our working hypothesis, the question that we asked in the second slide, is accepted. With this, I would like to acknowledge my colleagues, especially our group, the leader of our group, Professor Philip Zisset, and Dieter Parr, who was active in designing the tools, FE tools, Sebastian Baumbach, with whom I did the experimental studies, and Enrico Dallara, who is our lab manager. And instead of the faces of those people, I put the HRPQCT scans, so whenever you see those scans, you will know whom it belonged to. Furthermore, there are some colleagues and there are some collaborators which I have to thank, and of course the audience for the patience and the thank you.